Up next, it's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday, everyone. Beautiful day here in Santa Cruz, like 80 degrees out there today. Woo! Nice, nice. Hi, Mrs. Future.
Hi.
We got some stories for you today and a really great guest coming in the second hour. We're bringing in Payson McNett, who started the Fab Lab, the fabulous Fab Lab now at Cabrillo College, a state-of-the-art lab equipped with technology that allows students to learn all the latest and greatest stuff you need to know for 3D printing and scanning and laser cutting and engraving and vinyl cutting and CNC routers and all that kind of stuff.
Making more stuff.
Making stuff, right.
Cool tool.
The make religion, if you will.
Right. Well, it used to be the auto shop, wood shop type crowd. Now it's the makers.
Well, yeah, you want to make robots. We lost our
rockets.
We lost our cleaning lady. We lost our cleaning lady this week. Because
we didn't lose her.
She found a boyfriend.
She just got a.
Yeah,
she upgraded herself. She's no longer available for our simple needs.
I was floating by Mrs. Fiji the idea that we start building a robot to do the things that usually are cleaning.
Oh, there you go. Right.
And for the same budget.
Right. Right. Can we divert some resources to my robot research?
But you tell me about needing to clean the toilets. I don't know if robots could do a good job on that.
Yeah, I gave you a long list of the vital things that our helper
but
does.
We'll see. We'll see what we can figure out here.
I'll be really impressed if you can invent a robot, because I've often suspected that one of the reasons that robots are so dumb is because mostly they're being designed by men, and the things that men prioritize, you can't prioritize something you can't see. And in my experience, most men can't see the trash that needs to be taken out.
I see.
And they also can't they can't understand why we need to, let's see, what are the other things?
Well,
why we need to sweep the floor or
clean out the fridge.
They tend to like vacuuming, but probably because there's a sort of a robot involved.
Well, the robots can do vacuuming. I mean, at least we can do that.
But we already have a robot that does vacuuming.
That's true.
What we need is the rest of the stuff.
Mm. All right. I'll work on it, Mrs. Future. Meanwhile, out in the big bad world out there, computer systems from Russia to the U.S. were struck on Tuesday in an international cyber attack.
Mm.
It was somewhat similar to one that crippled tens of thousands of machines worldwide just a couple months ago.
Oh, yes, it's the ransomware attack.
Yeah, right? It is a ransomware thing where people get asked for a ransom to get their data back, and they have to pay in Bitcoin.
Right, so then maybe this is really just the Bitcoin has become sentient and it wants everyone to know that it's out there and it wants everyone to get themselves some Bitcoin.
Right? Or at least figure out how to pay people in Bitcoin.
Right, so it turns out that the first AI that has gone sentient is just a thug. You know, thug who wants to shake people down.
Now, if you're just tuning in, this is complete hypothesis on Mrs. Future's part.
You're saying it's not an AI?
I don't think it's an AI, no. I think it's some, what do they say, bad honchos.
Bad hombres.
Bad hombres. That are doing that. The initial reports came from Russia, so, you know.
So who's mostly being attacked now is Russia, right? I mean, all of the victims are
Ukrainians. The Ukrainians, several of their ministries, the Chernobyl nuclear facility, banks there in Ukraine, metro system. The companies affected, including the Danish giant Maersk, Rosneft, the Russian energy giant, Saint-Gobain, the French construction materials company, and in the English world, WPP, the British advertising agency.
Hmm. Do you think this is a publicity stunt?
No, I don't think so. In the United States, Merck, the drug giant, confirmed that their global networks have been hit, and a multinational law firm, DLA Piper. But it's not clear who's behind this attack. Like the attacks last May, the WannaCry attacks.
WannaCry.
today takes over computers and demands a digital ransom, which you pay in Bitcoin.
I'm guessing, based on who the victims are, that this is kind of like payback from the last round of ransomware where people were trying to pin it on the Russians. So now somebody's decided to like stick it to the Russians. Maybe what we've got here is
Theory number three about to hit us here. Theory number two is canceled.
It's been extremely obvious that Hillary Clinton has disappeared from the public view. Like, we don't know where she is.
Yes, Gracie.
That maybe she's been at hacker school and she has unleashed her first hacker attack.
Oh, you think she went back to school and learned how to do this?
Well, you gotta do something when you're not president.
All right. Well, would she call the virus Petya? Because that's what the computer
Petya
experts are calling
it. Oh,
Petya. Petya.
So this virus wants to Petya.
Yeah. 9 euro companies have been attacked. Symantec, the computer security company, said the new attack was using the same hacking tool. Now, get this, created by the National Security Agency as the WannaCry attack. So, is NSA tools being used against companies?
Right, and is it possible that these NSA tools are the ones that were like revealed by WikiLeaks? I mean, they're just open source now, right?
Well, let's just look at the issue at hand. The tools are called Eternal Blue. The tools were among the dozens leaked last April, probably at WikiLeaks, by a group known as Shadow Brokers. And the NSA has not acknowledged that its tools are being used, but
confirm nor deny that we invented these hacker tools, but we do know how to make you want to cry.
Yeah. The vulnerability for Eternal Blue was patched by Microsoft last April, so that was kind of nullified. But what it turns out that hundreds of thousands of organizations have failed to properly install the patch. So these companies that are paying...
What are people waiting for?
Well, it shows you that people just don't upgrade or update their operating system.
Yeah, people are afraid that if they upgrade, they'll lose all of those hard-won tools that they have mastered, and that they'll be stuck back trying to learn something new again.
Yeah, well, still, I would update this thing. I think this is more serious damage than any fear you might have. So anyway, just update your machines and you should be okay. All right, but this is a serious issue, and it's still going on right now and probably get a little worse. So that's the latest in the WannaCry computer virus world.
All right, Dr. Future and I will be right back after this little sponsor break.
Okay, let's get to Petya.
Yeah, let's get to Petya. Like that.
In other news, SpaceX completed a launch and landing double bill this weekend. They completed back-to-back launches. Two Falcon 9 vehicles went up into Earth orbit Friday, one from Florida, launching a Bulgarian satellite, and the Bulgarians now have better television and internet. And on Sunday, SpaceX lofted 10 spacecraft for the telecommunications company Iridium, flying out of Vandenberg and down in Southern California.
And we stood on top of Future Peak and looked out at the sky and we saw the smoky trail of the launch in real time.
Yes. Yeah, it was fun.
It was. Of course, we could see it much better on the webcast, the live stream that we were watching on our iPad.
At the same time.
Right.
It's not an either or thing. You bring your little phone outside and watch.
I felt very much like a citizen of the future, where we were catching the live webcast with our technology and we were looking at the horizon for the real thing. It was so cool.
It was there. See, not fake news.
Not fake news. Can see it with our own eyeballs.
So that means SpaceX now has 13 landing successes for those missions that sought to recover the booster, you know, where the booster lands on the drone ship. And this was particularly challenging this weekend because Friday's landing was hard. It looked a little bent over on the live video feed. And the rocket was extra toasty and it hit the deck really hard. But otherwise, it was good.
Oh, that's not the one we saw.
No, that was the one Friday. Mm-hmm. And the one we saw yesterday was foggy. It was foggy down in Vandenberg.
But the one we saw had new fins.
Yes,
the
titanium.
The new titanium fins on the booster rocket.
Right, and those worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
But they replaced the aluminum fins because they were melting when they were coming back into the atmosphere. So the titanium's a little heavier, but they don't melt. So we got that. And then the Bulgarian launch for this Bulgaria Sat-1 was a second-hand Falcon. And it's the second time that it flew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a good test of the recycling of the spacecraft, saving millions and millions of dollars.
That's great.
So as I mentioned before, last week, the SpaceX is doing launches for less than $100 million.
Each,
which compares to the $400 million cost previously from the United Launch Alliance, from the big boys.
Mm-hmm. And that was their best price. They had
Lockheed
some launches Boeing that were way more expensive than that.
Yeah, so it's like one-third, one-fourth the cost.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting lots of business and to pay for all that money they're going to need for getting to Mars.
Yes.
Setting up the Martian colony.
Right. Well, I think they're getting ready for Mars by learning how to terraform Earth. All these other projects, the Hyperloop project and the car elevator project.
Yeah. By the way, this second mission on a brand new Falcon that occurred on the West Coast, well, Iridium is one of the first global phone networks. When you have the satellite phone, you know.
I remember those Iridium
the big
phones.
Handle
they were
came out
hunky things, bricky.
Yeah. And they didn't work too well indoors. I got to go inside and make a phone call.
Right. And yet, they were the only kind of mobile phone. They were the first thing that wasn't attached to a phone cord.
They had gone bankrupt at one point. And then, anyway, they're back in business now. And they're replacing their satellite network. And this was another 10 going up to add to their existing network of 60 satellites that are now up there. Most of them past their design life, so they're upgrading their systems, rather. To be able to launch 10 at once is quite a boost.
And it was such a success because you watched the Falcon 9 launch, and they were at the parking orbit, which is what they call the orbit where the satellites get left in space.
Mm-hmm.
The parking orbit was about a half hour into the flight, and you could watch the satellites just be left behind, and that's it. Now they're just going to permanently orbit the Earth get them down again.
The new Iridium satellites also host payloads for two tracking companies. One is a company called Aireon, which aims to offer a service that reports the positions of aircraft sensing their automatic dependent surveillance broadcast transmissions, their ADS-B transmissions.
I don't understand what you just said.
Well, this is a system that's useful in following planes that are beyond radar range, okay, from satellite. Like if they're over the Atlantic or the Pacific or the Antarctic.
Oh,
or,
so like all those missing planes in the
Canada.
Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, they're outside of
the radar. They disappear
range.
In the middle of Canada? Really?
Well, in the remote parts of Canada, yeah.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Beyond radar range can now be picked up by these satellites. So that's good. That'll also help airplanes plan more efficient routing and help us when airplanes disappear mysteriously. Not that that ever happens, but, you know, when it might go over the Indian Ocean or something.
It has been known to happen not too long ago.
The other hosted payload for the Sunday launch was for Exact Earth. Exact Earth does something very similar with ships. Large vessels transmit what they call an AIS message. That's an automatic identification system message. This can now be sensed from orbit, so you know where the ships are. And as the ships become more and more automated, you'll see more and more like robot ships that'll be tracked by satellite.
Hmm. Somehow the movie WALL-E comes to mind.
Does it now?
We're going to have this automated machine planet delivering stuff all over the place with satellites tracking automated delivery vessels. And the people are going to, instead of being able to push the sign at the stop block and get preference, they're just going to have to get out of the way.
They will. They will. I mean, people won't have to be driving. And not that many are anyway.
No. They'll be like Mod Dib in Dune, and they'll have to use their hooks to grab the vehicles going by and mount the automated worms as they wiggle around the planet.
No. They will stop for you. They will come to you like...
They will sense that I'm like a human being.
Like a taxi, like an Uber, like a Lyft. They'll come... Well, the ones that are supposed to stop for you will. The other ones will just do their thing.
Are we going to program them to serve humans, or are we only going to serve machines?
No. No, that is baseless fear, Mrs. Future.
It's not
baseless
fear.
Baseless fear.
It's not fear. I'm just thinking about all those...
What could go wrong? You're sounding like a Hollywood director now.
That's right. But the good news is all of the emergencies that we can anticipate and prepare for, those are the ones that don't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you want to be prepared.
We want to be prepared.
All right. Well, you know, along these lines, I might as well add this in just to increase your wariness of all this. Uh-huh. Amazon has applied for a patent that gives more insight into how they plan to do drone delivery. They have a new infrastructure, a new building structure that looks amazingly like a beehive that's specifically designed for drones taking off and landing.
Makes a lot of sense. The drones have to live somewhere between flights.
Yes, they do. And they have to recharge, and they have to pick up their new packages, and they have to take off and deliver them
hive.
And come home. Mm-hmm. Right? And so they would take off, land, pick up deliveries in a tower that is placed in densely populated areas that would house the drones, looking a lot like a beehive. Kind of cool structure.
Interesting. And
fulfillment centers are typically these large volume, single floor warehouse buildings to temporarily store items before they ship to customers. Mm-hmm. So because of their large footprint, these buildings are on the outskirts of cities and are not convenient for deliveries in the cities. So with the drones, they could have these little towers in the middle of the cities and bring a lot of the packages effortlessly into these cities.
What they remind me of, these little drone hives, remind me of carrier pigeon roosts, the kinds that used to be used in the past when carrier pigeons were the best way to send a message far away.
That's before my time, but I think I know what you mean. Uh-huh. Yeah, carrier pigeon, special delivery.
Right, special delivery, but the payload could only be a scroll of paper around the pigeon's foot.
Yeah. I think the royals used it a lot in Europe.
Right. You know, that was the mystery schools.
Probably the military in those days. But the average population, probably not so much.
Probably not so much.
Yeah. Now, this is for all of us.
Uh-huh. Well, here it comes, the automated future. How about we take a little break for some sponsor messages and some CBS News, and then come back for more of the Doctor Future
Show. It's going to the point where you have flying warehouses, but anyway, that's for a little further out. So let's take a break, and we'll see you after the break.
CBS News Update.
Okay, welcome back to the Doctor Future Show. Also in the news this week, there are different strategies emerging in the driverless car scene. Alphabet's Google is now dealing with Avis to have Avis manage some of their self-driving test cars developed by the Alphabet Waymo unit. And Fiat Chrysler is also involved with them as well, developing some programs. They are mostly testing right now for the Google technology in the Phoenix, Arizona area, but it isn't exclusively there. Also of interest in that arena is Apple's deal with Hertz.
Alphabet Hertz.
The Avis rival Hertz. That hurts. Apple has been testing a half a dozen self-driving cars around the Bay Area, and they're just leasing a number of Lexus SUVs from Hertz with the idea of retrofitting them with driving test systems. That's the Lexus RX 450H, if you see any of those on the road.
Stay out of the lane.
If there's a driver.
That's right.
The third player in this, of course, is Tesla, which is trying to pull off independent of any of them, of Hertz, Avis, Apple, Google. They're doing their own thing. That's the Tesla group.
Leading the pack so far.
So far, yeah. Yeah, because you'll be able to get a Tesla. It's pretty much getting all that automation right away.
And they can auto-update your firmware with a press of a button.
Yeah. Also, in the transport business, there was a very interesting group out of Colorado that have developed a new type of aircraft. It's a supersonic airplane that was shown off at the Paris Air Show just, I think, 2 weeks ago. This new plane promises to be the future for supersonic passenger jets. Mm-hmm. It's a company called Boom. It's the XB-1 supersonic demonstrator jet. They're working on the prototype.
Boy, I sure would not want to be under the flight path for that airplane.
It was revealed at the Paris Air Show, and they already have 76 orders for it already across five airlines. So it's already starting to come. It's like the SpaceX of the aircraft.
Right. Well, it's taking the place of the Concorde, right?
The Concorde's been gone for a long time.
That's right. But it was the fast jet. It was the fastest way to cover the planet.
Yeah. And then this one gets you to Europe in 2.5 hours from Colorado. The new design includes refinements that will have better stability, better propulsion system, better safety. They're looking at carrying about 50 passengers initially, about $5,000 a piece to go for that.
Yeah, I think what they should do is they should have an ejection chute so that they can drop a whole bunch of headphones so that people can cover their ears, you know, like everybody under the flight path as they break the sound barrier.
Well, they're aiming to fly the demonstrator next year, first with subsonic tests near their headquarters in Denver, then with supersonic flights. For doing that, they're going to go to Edwards Air Force Base in Southern California.
Oh, boy. So they might actually fly over us. We might get another one of those mysterious...
sonic booms?
Sonic booms.
Get all those reports
analyze.
On the radio? Yeah, that was fun, huh? So it's a new design. It's supposed to make the sonic booms kinder and gentler.
Yeah, I wonder if they have come up with any cancellation technology for the sonic boom so that they can make it quieter.
Well, they're working on it. Let's put it that way. They're definitely working on the shape. And the advantages today is that we do have very fancy simulators in the computer that can try different wing shapes and engine thrusts and look at the outcome without actually having to build them.
Yeah, that's one of the unique things about this jet is its design. It has a curved beak, right? It's looking down.
Yeah, it looks like a supersonic. The thing is, with a supersonic, you have to be long and skinny.
Uh-huh.
And that works really well.
Right.
So it's like one of those long, skinny aircraft.
Sure. Like in...
Swept wings.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming from the private sector. It's not a government plane.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, called Boom.
Okay.
Boom XB-1.
You want to get there fast? Boom!
Exactly. You want to get to China?
Boom!
You want to pay for it? Well, China becomes the first country in the world to test a national cryptocurrency.
Ooh. We've been seeing the ink drying on that little project. So tell me the news.
Well, China's central bank has developed its own cryptocurrency, which is now being tested.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cryptocurrencies could affect not just China, but the rest of the world. So people are paying attention to this.
Well, it was no accident that there was a news article today from Goldman Sachs.
Right, which we have listed.
Their cryptocurrency.
Yes.
So probably that has to do with China embracing it.
Goldman Sachs was not promoting their own cryptocurrency. They were just doing a description of what cryptocurrency is and understanding the blockchain for everyone to get more of a handle in their minds about what this is all about. How does a cryptocurrency work? So Goldman Sachs put together like an educational piece on it. We have a link to this on our links page.
Yeah.
Go to drfutureshow.com/links and you will be there and you can see what Goldman Sachs wants you to understand.
About cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
And trusting them with your safety.
Absolutely. The prototype cryptocurrency from China, it's going to be introduced alongside their primary currency, which is called the yuan,
Yuan.
Yuan or...
Yeah, it's not the yuan. It's called the yuan. Like you want some.
Yeah.
Yuan.
And they'll be simulating scenarios and running mock transactions with some of the commercial banks in China with the new currency.
I see.
This could be significant for them. It would decrease the cost of transactions and make financial services more accessible, which would be a big help to millions of people in the country who are not connected yet to conventional banks, which is the case in China. There's still a large population that isn't part of the modern banking system.
Yeah, classically, the stories tell us that Asians like to hide their currency in their mattress because they don't trust the government or they don't trust the institutions because why would anybody not trust the banks and the government? I don't know.
Well, Yeah, well, that's a big topic, Mrs. Future.
Mm-hmm.
But meanwhile, they're testing out this new currency. And I guess what they want you to do is use their cryptocurrency, ultimately, just like others.
Yeah, there's going to be a cryptocurrency war. It'll be like, who is going to win the war here?
What currency will you trust?
That's right. Which currency is going to be useful and which one is just going to become ashes?
Yeah. Right now, a single Bitcoin is worth about $2,500.
Wow.
When it first came out in 2009, it was worth $0.0007, which is 7/10 of a penny.
7/10 of a penny was about, what, 7 or 8 years ago?
Yeah.
And just 7 or 8 months ago, it was $750. So there
is $2,500.
I guess that WannaCry virus has really helped Bitcoin a lot.
Yeah, it seems to be, right? And China's trying to simulate a self-developed cryptocurrency of its kind. Russia has stated that regulators of all countries agree that it's time to develop national cryptocurrency. So Russia's central bank is getting into it as well. There are now 260,000 stores in Japan that will begin accepting Bitcoin as legal tender this summer. And big banks like Santander, which I've never heard of, Santander, have announced plans to develop their own cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
So revolutionizing the business world, methods of transaction, its traceability, its use in administering universal basic incomes, delivery of human aid overseas. We did a story last week on how cryptocurrency was used for paying for human aid going to Syria. So we're seeing a lot going on
mm-hmm.
with cryptocurrency at this point in time.
I'd say thinking about how does cryptocurrency differ from cash in your pocket is kind of like if you can understand that your phone holds your access to the internet, well, you don't have to go to the internet to use your phone to keep a stash of currency on your phone. Mm-hmm. So you can keep a stash of currency on your phone, and then that wallet allows you to do transactions through your phone. And that's basically what most people are going to know or need to know about cryptocurrencies.
They just use your phone. Well, what's the difference between that and, say, using Apple Pay?
Well, to the people who are programming it, there's a world of difference because it has to do with how does your phone talk to the other people who use money for their medium of exchange. But for the individual who's doing a transaction, you just need to know that you have money and you can spend money and that the person you want to buy something from will take it. And cryptocurrency is solving all those problems for you in a way that you don't have to know more than where your phone is and how to access your account.
What's your guess on how we'll initially see it? Will it be like another choice along with PayPal on how to pay a bill? A cryptocurrency, PayPal,
yeah, probably
Visa,
it'll
MasterCard,
show up like that
Discover.
For the average person. A lot of people who are using it now
have created
their own exchanges.
Yeah.
You know, so there are cryptocurrency exchanges where you literally buy the coins with other things, and you can buy them with some hard currencies like euros or dollars or other forms, depending on where they are. Or you can get them given to you. Like there's a lot of cryptocurrency promotions going on where the companies that are mining the cryptocurrencies are giving people incentives to buy things with cryptocurrencies, and they're rewarding them for buying other things like education packages by giving them cryptocurrencies that they can spend.
Mm.
So there's a big marketing effort to get people to buy and sell things with cryptocurrencies.
Yes. So when do you think we'll see it all happen? When do you
it's happening now.
You
saw
still,
it's in the headlines today, and I'd say in 5 years, the entire e-commerce is going to be dominated by cryptocurrencies everywhere.
Okay. All right.
We got to go to our break, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the Dr. Future Show. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Now, this might be kind of fun to see. Not everything goes as planned.
I'd say, in my case, almost nothing goes as planned. I've given up on planning.
Okay.
I'm more into reacting.
Yeah, when they say planning is God's way of laughing at you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've given God a lot of laughs.
Well, the Museum of Failures is here to help with that kind of thinking. It opened this month in Sweden, in Helsingborg, Sweden, and it features displays of our biggest flops.
Great.
And don't worry if you don't speak Spanish. Finally, it's mostly in English.
You don't have to be great to be in a hall of honor. You can be really lousy.
And it's the brainchild of a Dr. Samuel West, who was drawn to how and why failed ventures happen. And he began collecting examples of ill-fated innovations. And six of these products were shown at a London conference recently, and it received rave reviews. So it prompted the promotion of a permanent Museum of Failure in Sweden.
Well, do you have some of those items in mind?
I do. One was the Newton, Apple's forerunner to the iPhone.
Much beloved, and yet it could not compete against the iPhone, which came later.
One was the New Coke.
New Coke.
Right, that was a failure.
I can't say I remember it.
New Coke is forgotten. Coke 2. Coke 2.0, forget it. So what is understood now is that many failed items are precursors to huge successes. They cite the Newton as an example of that.
Mm. And probably New Coke was the precursor to Classic Coke. Let's go back to where we started.
Well, it kind of didn't work in that arena. But more works with technology.
Uh-huh.
Like Google Glass, you know, where it will probably come back as something more interesting than its previous incarnation.
You're hoping. I know you're hoping.
Yeah.
Since you're such a glass head.
Well, it only makes sense in so many levels. Sony Betamax was another failure, considered failure.
But of course, we loved it better than we loved VHS.
The basic concept was great, right? That, so it came out and started the whole thing, you know, with recording. There was also his and her pens from Bic.
Bic was, had his and her pens.
His and her pens.
This was like in the 60s or something?
Yeah, but they were especially trying to target women with pens, and that didn't work. No.
Women are perfectly happy to use unisex pens.
They were. No frilly patterns for them. Bic for her does not succeed. There was also Nokia designed a really bad video cell phone game, and cell phone didn't work. There was a...
So the game worked, but the phone didn't?
Yeah. Oh, here, there's a special Trump edition of Monopoly, which didn't work.
Really? No, it didn't work?
No, it didn't work.
Wow.
Maybe it needs to be re-released.
Maybe it should be re-released.
Change the game board.
I see.
For the entire planet, you know, with Russia and China.
When did this game come out?
Good question.
I'd like to see this game.
Yeah.
Monopoly.
Monopoly Trump, it's called. Collector's Edition.
Oh, boy. I bet those are going fast.
There's a pop-up version of this museum now traveling around the world, and will be in Miami December 7th.
Okay.
So what epic commercial failures stand out in your memory? Anything in particular?
Got me on the spot there.
Yeah? Any of you out there? Any classic?
Classic failures.
No? Okay.
Hard to say. I mean, Pet Rock comes to mind, but that was a huge success.
Yeah, right. You know, so there's, you know, we did attend.
Oh, what about last year's Pepsi commercial? Or just recently, there was a Pepsi commercial that was all about a protest march.
No, it's kind of politics with Pepsi didn't work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to name names, but boy, there were some embarrassing moments for people.
Yeah. One of the big areas under contention right now in the tech world is a whole new arena called the Internet of Things. And whether or not that's going to be a success or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's basically creating all kinds of things in your house as being smarter, like your coffee maker, your refrigerator,
your vacuum.
Your vacuum, right. All these things are now talked to the internet.
Right.
Your refrigerator, for example, will tell you when you're getting low on milk or eggs or butter and such.
Your computers probably will talk to you, but they're just tired of you not listening.
They'll auto-order for you.
Uh-huh. Okay. We'll take that as yes. We assume since we're out, you must want some more.
Yeah. There's a very interesting article this week I brought to your attention on our links page that is about the Internet of Things and whether or not this is really a good idea and how they can be hacked. You know, that, oh, your house can start to be hacked. That there was an evidence for this a few months ago when these devices were being hacked and used for what's called the DDoS attack.
Mm-hmm.
And they were being used to call up websites and, you know, get them denial of service attacks until they failed. And you can use your coffee pot maker to be one of the
there
computers.
There you go. A new thing to be afraid of.
All these things are becoming computers, right? It's all computers. And so you can make computers do things. And that's a very interesting article on how to protect yourself.
Protect yourself from
your
Internet
house.
Of Things. from all of your devices calling the Internet.
Yes.
You need parental controls for your coffee pot now. Okay, let's talk to our caller, Steve, who has something to say about sales tax. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hi.
Yeah.
You were talking about beta versus VHS, and I was thinking Sony has been responsible not to downgrade a wonderful company, but they've been responsible for a lot of failed technology. Did you ever hear about the L cassette?
The L cassette? No, I haven't.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
It was an audio recording format that was supposed to be a super bigger hi-fi version of the normal cassette.
Oh, and so it would be not high definition, I guess, but just...
No, not video, audio.
Audio. Oh, okay, yes, because audio, there's a lot of hiss.
It was introduced after that. But of course, Sony was also responsible for such things as high promotion of DHT tape, the memory stick.
Right, I remember that. Yeah, I've used many of those in their camcorders.
Mini discs.
The MD recorder, the MD, remember
MD
that?
MD recorders, right. Anyway, they seem to have stumbled onto a lot of those in their history, tried to promote certain things that failed. DAT tapes, like I said, the L cassette. There was, in fact, another thing from RCA, of all people in the United States, that was a giant version, somewhat like the L cassette, that predated the normal compact cassette in the early 60s, and that was also a rather colossal failure. It used quarter-inch tape, like reel-to-reel tape. It looked like a much overgrown version of the normal audio cassette we're all familiar with.
But just a higher quality sound.
Actually, it was designed to... It was one of the first systems that was designed to be better than reel-to-reel tape in the late, it was introduced in the late 50s, early 60s, as a cheaper format than reel-to-reel tape. But no one liked it, and it had suffered from the classic, only two labels released pre-recorded tapes on the format, only a couple of manufacturers supported machines, and it suffered the standard, which came first, software or hardware kind of death.
Yeah, well, I guess Sony was a big enough company to do software-hardware combos and see what would happen.
Yes, they could do that. They did that even with, you know, there were pre-recorded mini discs.
Yeah. Now, where were they with the MP3 players? They kind of missed that one, too, didn't they?
Sony, boy, they didn't really have an answer to the iPod. I think they had fairly early MP3 players, but they were pretty concerned about... You know, I'm much more of the old analog guy. I could tell you about the tube technologies and the stuff from the 50s and 60s that failed. But I would say that Sony became pretty concerned with about the era of Napster and all that.
Yeah.
A lot of their stuff was, they were a little overly concerned with copyright management. And so they didn't really get on board. I think they were really concerned about, if memory serves, they did do MP3 players, but they were very concerned about...
Yeah, you're right. They were busy suing people who were downloading music.
Yeah,
so they tried to invent a complete closed environment that you had to use their software and their catalog and their player.
Yeah, they didn't really embrace the Internet.
Media.
Right, they missed the Internet thing, too, yeah.
Yeah, so they weren't there with the early Napster-like MP3 file sharers and all of that. They missed that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for the history lesson, Steve.
Yeah. What would you like to see in the Museum of Failure?
Well, that one RCA thing that was the precursor, it really does. If you're familiar with Techmoan on reviews of old, obsolete, it's a British guy that reviews obsolete technical products as well as current ones.
Yes.
From England.
Yeah, that would be cool.
He actually did a review of that format, among others.
Oh. I'd like to hear that to see what the difference is. Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks for
calling. We got to go for the news, but appreciate your input. All right. So this is the Dr. Future Show. We're taking a break for the news, and we're going to come back with guest Payson McNett, who has started the Fab Lab here at Cabrillo College, and it's setting the tone for the entire country. We think you'll find it fascinating.
All right, folks. You're going to hear Dave Michaels with some traffic and weather, a little CBS News, and then more Dr. Future Show.